because Dr. Francis Lawrence seemed to indicate that they would prefer to be in their constituencies because of the strike. My own view was that this is a normal parliamentary day. We have a sitting in the afternoon of the House. So, you know, it was not something that one could unilaterally say to members, look, don't come to the meeting, or that we're cancelling the meeting because of the fact that members had wanted to spend the time in their constituencies. Simply because, as far as I understand, if the House is sitting, members are meant to be in Parliament. And then we obviously got some indications from different members to say that, no, they will be coming. And in that eventuality, there was absolutely no way that I could cancel the meeting, simply because, as I say, some members indicated that they would be coming. So there's no reason for me to cancel the meeting at all. In any case, the rules provide that while we're considering matters, you don't need a quorum. So literally, the chairperson can sit here and discuss things with herself, which has happened on a few occasions, I might just say. as long as we don't vote on anything. So we will then proceed with or without a quorum today, because we're going through the submissions. As you know, we've got quite a few submissions to go through. I want to just do a quick recap for those of you who were not here, so that you know which issues you can already start flagging that we've had discussions on. In other words, we've been through these submissions from, and remember, we're only dealing with the people who we haven't called for oral submissions now, right? So we've started discussing a whole lot of issues pertaining to the inputs that we received. The first issue that we discussed was the issue of values in education. We went through a submission that called for more religious education in schools. And we came to the conclusion, essentially, that values in education is absolutely important. Religious instruction is not excluded in terms of our constitution, but clearly, as far as public schools are concerned, there can't be a weighting in favor of one religion as opposed to the other. The fact that we have religious studies included in our school is, to us, an inclusive issue and so on. So that was the one issue, which was around values. The other one was around teacher salaries. There was an issue that needed to be checked. It was a submission that we received which was very, very specific to a teacher who was apparently teaching for 36 years and was only earning 10,000 rand and so on. And we thought that that was a very specific issue that Mr. Bundy needed to check up on. Mr. Bundy is still going to come back to us on that issue, I think, or have you already? We've got some feedback on that one. Go ahead, Mr. Bundy.
Morning, members. We have been informed that it's possible. Previously, it was acceptable for a teacher to have a standard 8 qualification, actually a standard 8, and a 2-year teacher certificate, the old primary teacher certificate, abbreviated PTC. So, ever since the department has required additional qualifications, it now expects teachers to have RQ15, which is above standard 8 and the PTC certificate. So such teachers have been rendered underqualified. It's only such teachers who can earn a maximum of 10,000 rand after 36 years of teaching. They are expected to upgrade their qualifications.
There's Professor Jansen who wrote to us and said that this was a letter he received from a person who was unnamed.
Yeah, the official from the department said that she can only determine exactly if this case falls in this category, if she has a file. So, I don't know, we can...
Yeah.
Yes, I don't know.
Okay.
You remember that this was an issue
apparently somebody else who quoted Professor Jansen.
Well, then that's really difficult for us to then follow up. But thank you very much for your efforts. No doubt the issue of salaries will be another issue that we've been to. And some the other issue was inclusive education was the other issue that we had some standard discussion on. If you recall that whole discussion with Mishmana around the issue of inclusivity doesn't necessarily speak to segregation within a school. In other words, within a school, if you were to have the media facilities and then children can be fed through to deal with their issues and problems and then make space again. That was, for us, that was important if we were to talk about inclusive education because kids do have different needs and that if we do not, you can't say that inclusive education and you don't provide support for kids who need support. Clearly that was in summary not the system. Then we discussed a very interesting issue that was raised by Mr. Now, which was that education tip, which raises the issue of what the requirement for a part of grade 8, from grade 8, is. You will recall those of you who were here, we were talking about, we were saying that they have to pass 40% home language and 40% second language. And we had that enormous debate about what that meant in practice. Because oftentimes the second language isn't always the language of instruction. In many cases that is, but in many cases it isn't. So you may have a home language, but you may receive instruction in your first language, but that's not your home language. So you may, for example, be Zulu speaking. You may go to a school that has language of instruction in English, but the second language being Afrikaans. And if Zulu is not a subject in your school, but yes, you have to talk English as well as Afrikaans as 40%. And what Ms. Now is saying was that learners must have 40% to pass their home language and second language, which also didn't make too much of sense if the person's home language is to be able to receive the first language is actually English and second Afrikaans. So what we have said, and I think we tend to sometimes consensus on those issues, is that when it comes to your language of instruction, the pathway should be the highest, which is 40%. And then schools can choose because they have a choice as to which other subjects they must the students must pass at 40%. And that could be math, it could be the language, or it could be some other subject. It doesn't necessarily need to be the same language. So for those kids who, in the case that I'm focused, would have a chance of the second language, almost a third language. Require that at 40%. was basically the discussion that we had, and that seems to be where we're going in terms of our proposal going forward in terms of where we're pitching. The other issue which was raised by Mr. Mangabela is a very interesting. If you look at the past level of failure, we wonder to what extent that is caused by this requirement that your second language is actually pitched at a high level, given that in many instances your third or sometimes fourth language. And that perhaps it would be a better thing to say, well, math should be part of it. So that was the other interesting discussion we had. And then we lastly had discussion on the issue of teacher development, whether it's colleges, the issue of the number of teachers, at least producing enough teachers, ongoing the research that Mr. Mahate was today. We did speak with the higher education on the various issues, including the issue of the number of students that universities are churning out annually into the teaching profession, as opposed to when we had colleges, for example. Because the indication by all accounts is that we have a shortage of teachers, and going forward, if you look at the projections going forward, there are more teachers leaving the profession, retirement or just leaving the profession and coming into the profession, and then obviously there may be expansion there. So that one is still outstanding research. And then lastly, we spoke, our last debate was on the very interesting thing about learner and innovation. Here there were two views of the committee. The one was that in order to improve quality outcomes, we do need a lower teacher. The other one was you don't need to sadly need a lower student teacher ratio. And that what you need to do is you need to ensure that the current norm, which is 1:40 and 1:35. In high school, 1:40 and primary school are actually important. Because what you have suddenly is the younger situation where you can't school is a good one, I mean it's a lot of 1:74 or something like that. And so really the slide needs to happen to just get to what we call the national norm first before we can start talking about. And of course, there are a whole lot of issues around the reduction of teacher ratios, one of which is not connecting with a lot of track, teachers demanding a higher salary. And in fact, if you look at the education budget, 2/3 of the budget is going towards talent. So, how on earth do you expect the department to engage aggressively in increasing the number of folks when, in fact, your budget already is being completed by the existing committee, and there you're bringing back the real issue. So we haven't exhausted that discussion, but certainly that was where we were at our last discussion. Now, Mr. Bundy, I think what you're going to do, Mr. Mahate, is now just giving me some data. Which is, I don't really understand that CGCE, ACE, honors and so on. But I suggest, Mr. Mahate, look, let's do this. Let's deal with this comprehensively. What I suggest you do is index this thing and whatever other documents you're going to give up for the study. This is now around the output of the university in terms of the graduates and so on. And we need to juxtapose that with what we understand is the shortage, what the department understands is the shortage as well. So I want those, I don't want us to get piecemeal, you know, documents one at a time. So what you can do perhaps is to, I know that you're busy working on the documents yourself, put this together with that. And then what we will have is a comprehensive set of documents on this issue of number of teachers. you're not going to be there next week, but you're going to prepare those documents for us. And he said, especially if you want to use the ICU.
What is left is just to interpret this. The entire document is ready on the part of Funza Lushaka intake. The data is there. I was just waiting for this. So my indication was to say they sent me information. I will work on it either today afternoon and tomorrow morning. And the document might be ready on Thursday. Thank you.
Justice Libago.
Education 12, the key issue there is that the submission calls for an inclusion of a compulsory subject or theme on good governance in the curriculum. That's the key issue. In order to help children to plan their future.
Or they'll be able to do it, or they're trying to go some attention to. So I want to suggest that this particular issue become another area of focus, but that we will find it and we will encounter it as we go through these submissions and know that there have been quite a few submissions on this issue of vocational training and exposure of young people to different subjects and possible forms. So I'm putting this down as another big area for discussion. Anybody want to raise anything on this matter, Mr.
Thank you, Chair. I know you Chair, you did warn us, those of us who may have skipped some of the sessions, not to take you back. I'm aware of that. But it seems to be talking about two things. On the inputs, is it a she or he? Children should be helped to plan their future. That's okay. But in the recommendation, you talk about in a compulsory subject of good governance. Now, these are two things. Good governance does not equal vocational or planning their future, which in the submission, is it specified what would constitute this good governance? Because as I understand it, it means something as good governance.
You see that we haven't taken that issue because we're not
quite sure. And where we're not quite sure what the person means and they don't motivate it, there's no point in us discussing it.
Yeah.
So my sense is that the one thing we can extract from here is the issue of vocational training, which other people have also. So what we've tried to do with every submission is to find something useful to take out and so that it can enrich the discussion.
No, I'm happy.
Can we move on? Thank you. Let's go on now. We're not dealing with the best education for the team, but we are dealing with. Are we dealing with 14? Have we seen this? Are we dealing with 14? 14. Okay, Mr. Bandit.
Education, submission 14. The submission argues that schools should focus on developing skills and competencies rather than the academic results of matric examinations. Traditional practices and undifferentiated life orientation stifle learners' aspirations for qualification. Focus should shift from a matric qualification towards a skill set as the basic school living equipment. The next recommendation, career education should be offered rather than career guidance. So it's basically a call for skills.
I'm not sure if I'm developed online, but I wanted to, I'm checking what the challenge may be to the person or the group that submitted this. Career education versus career guidance. What's the difference?
When we deal with the first issue, you don't think that we'll get to the career guidance.
Okay, the skill. Okay, I wanted to start with that. But then, yeah, I didn't go to the skills. I'm sure you remember that I missed that one. But I was fortunate to have been a skill school outside this country. And I think I talked about it. They call it production school. You know, you are taught to produce something, not necessarily academic, to be able to. Like they would take, I think what they are doing in South Africa maybe more or less the same thing. They take a new bus, for example, and take out the engine down, and these people will assemble it back. And after that, they are mechanics. They get the certificate and they go and work. Now, the whole issue of skills in South Africa, at present, I think in a smaller way, it's included from the very beginning. We go back to life orientation again, where you are not taught to do things per se, but you are given the reasons why you need to do things, why you need to choose. And at present in South Africa, we know we have this we like call it bands. The missing band, I think we debate about it also, that some people do electric everything at the gate, but there are people who are willing to do N3, which was equivalent. There is this N1, level 1 and level 2, I don't want to talk to them because it's very new. But N3 is equivalent. Now the challenge remains that when you apply for a job and you produce your N3 certificate, you are not given a chance. Once it's you and somebody submitting matric, although maybe the advert will say matric or equivalent of matric, so that we need to change the mindset. I think that's what we said the other day, that there is nothing wrong with N3. N3 is, in fact, equivalent to matric. That's what I'm saying. And if I'm way out, I'll be realigning myself as we go on. Thank you.
Now, this was the other issue that we asked Mr. Mahada. You remember there was this gentleman who was talking precisely around the schools that you were mentioning now, where you take out the engine and you put it together and stuff like that, which is essentially a tactile way of learning rather than a kind of academic way of learning, which is hearing and writing. Now, what we said was that, and you were even mentioning that you've got a daughter who's doing N6, at an FET college. We're trying to find out through Mr. Mahada what's the story there, because it seemed to us that what used to pertain was that you had these trade schools that filled in a gap somehow. Because remember, we still have that situation where there's a significant exodus of the school body in terms of learners, particularly at grade 9. And these were the ones that were supposed to go to FET colleges and so on. But actually the research has shown that it's those kids who are matriculating are actually going to FET colleges more than those ones who are in grade 9. And then we are saying that previously they had the option of going to trade schools, or what do you call them, the Afrikaans word?
Ambach
schools, yes. People were mentioning Ambach schools, where if you're not coping at an academic stream, which is really what we've provided only in our schooling system, is an academic stream. If you're not coping there should be options available to you to go and still learn and still develop and still contribute in a useful way to society. Because as much as you need academics and mathematicians and literature professors and whatever else, you still need people who are going to farm. You still need people who are going to build houses. You still need people who are going to be plumbers. You still need people who need to be electricians, you know, those kinds of things. So you need those skills in society. And really what we're saying is that there isn't too much in terms of options for those kids who are going from grade 9 because they can't cope, they live in grade 9, wanting to find an option in terms of different learning. But when you go to FET, remember I was still saying to you that the first 2 years of FET is essentially a repeat of what you would have done had you gone to grade 10, 11, and 12. Because the idea is to try and elevate you through a different route to get to matric in any case. But if you're a kid who is just, you know, I don't learn that way. I learn through doing, and I'm not disabled, so I don't qualify to go to a school of skills. So what I end up doing is I have very limited choices. Even if I do go to FET, it's still academic for the first 2 years at least before I can start with my skilling program. So there are limited options. Whereas previously, if you went to these trade schools, you could then at least have a foot in the door. You could either go and enhance your skills later on and, you know, build for yourself a career path. And that's really what we were saying is currently lacking in that system. What they were saying, those trade schools actually did give you some kind of end qualification where you could then, you know, fit into FET further on as well and so on. And that being removed as such, you find that is a problem at the moment because now they're dealing with level 2, 3, 4, whatever. But clearly, Mrs. Moshwana is raising this issue of the ends being still around in the sense that FETs do offer the end courses as well. And Mr. Mahada was busy doing some research on that, which he was showing is still in progress, given that that you have these, you seem to have all these bands that they were trying to kind of fit together. It's almost like a puzzle where they were trying to fit it together. But that the puzzles don't seem to fit quite exactly because it comes from different eras and so on. So, for example, if your intention at FET is to bridge the gap between school and university, because that would be the ideal, isn't it? That somebody who's out of FET must be able to then go and study further at university. At the moment, that seems to be a problem. So what they are doing, obviously, is to work on the synergies between university and your colleges, to make your colleges the kind of springboards to university so that you don't have such a high dropout rate in any case when you get to university. So what's tending to happen is that the standards at your colleges are rising to fit the requirements of your universities. But what that does at the bottom is that it creates a bigger gap. So for you who's leaving grade 9 who can't cope, you then have to go to FET. Guess what? You're going to drop out in the first 2 years. And the stats actually prove that because the stats actually show that in the first 2 years in FET, you have a huge, huge dropout rate. So that's the problem at the moment. And there's nothing in between there in terms of options. So here I am. I don't really cope well with languages. I don't really cope well with math and so on. But I'm very good with electronics. You know, I can fix things up. I fix things up around the house and stuff. And I've now dropped out of grade 9. Where do I go? I can't go to FET college because, you know what, I'm going to have to start from year 1. And year 1 is kind of mirroring what is happening at your school. So to get me up to matric. And I'm not going to cope there. If I'm not coping at school, I'm not, definitely not going to be coping at FET. So really, I think people are speaking to this gap that's increasingly existing, which, and I'm not saying that FET mustn't speak to university. I think it should. I think that's the correct way to do it. If you look at the United States, for example, kids don't go to university immediately. Most kids go to colleges, and only then do they think of going to university, because colleges are your backbone of skills development. So most of your kids, even your journalists and so on, a college graduate, they're not university graduates. If you want to go and do your honors and your masters and so on, you go to university. But college is your backbone of your education system. So that's correct. That trend is correct. But the problem exists here at the bottom, where that gap is getting bigger and bigger, and the options are getting smaller and smaller for those kids who are not inclined to learning in that particular fashion, but who need to develop skills and who then actually can go on to becoming, contributing members of society. And if you look at the whole economic development plan and the industrial development plan for this country, it's based on having a skilled workforce. Now, how do you then get to a point where you have a skilled workforce when most of your kids are just left without options? Because remember, when you look at the numbers, it's only 1/3 of those who started off that make it to matric. So 2/3 of your kids are left without options. And that's the big issue that people are raising. Now, what it is that we do with this is going to be something, I think, that will hopefully be a very interesting debate. Let's say Mr. Ponshani, then Mr. Dudley, then Mr. Mushwa.
What you're saying is very interesting, I haven't explored to any extent the Mozambican system of education, but what happens in our area, for instance, flooded by the Mozambican, there is no Mozambican learner, whether he leaves school at grade 9 or lower, who doesn't have a skill. Either he's a builder, electrician, or it seems they integrate these skills back from the beginning, whether later on he chooses to go to FET or university, but he will have a form of a skill of some sort. But I haven't explored to any depth the assistant. Perhaps it would be interesting if he looks into that system.
What I've done is I've asked Mr. Bandi and Ms. Kubai to look at different countries and give us some suggestions so that we can actually plan a trip. Maybe, given that Mozambique is quite near, and I mean, if that's the case, it would seem to me that would be an ideal place to go because, you know, we're talking about a country that has probably 1/8 of the resources that we do. And if they're able to churn out skilled people in the way that you're saying, then it's certainly an example that we need to follow up on. So I'm going to ask Mr. Bandi to please just incorporate the suggestion of Mr. Ponshani into your investigation. Mr. Bandi?
Yeah, I was thinking, obviously, the way our natural thinking goes is that where you've got the academic, you must have just a school for skills. I mean, you put whatever skills you put there. But actually, if you look up in China, the skills schools are not just we need some skill schools, so let's teach everyone skills. It's which country has put an industry in this particular problem? What specific skills does that industry need? We set up the school right here next to this industry, and we provide specifically those skills so we have a constant, so it's totally linked to the industry. And I remember years ago, somebody was talking about their successes in South Carolina or something, and I know that particular administration was put out by gambling cartels 2 years later, but in the 2 years that they had done this thing, it was the same thing. They had just flat tax and blah, 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 and gotten rid of all their joblessness, but it was specific to industry relocating in South Carolina, but then government working to actually set up the specific skill schools directly related to that industry, so they're providing, it was amazing to see the spin-off it had an effect on society all around. So I'm just thinking, obviously, it's not just something we need to say we need so many schools. We obviously have to somehow try and find how we link it specific to the industry that's requiring it.
I think you're right to some extent, because if you look at the schools of skills, you'll see that when you speak to them, and I don't know to what extent you had discussions with the principal there, but he was saying that it is true that you do need some kind of feeder capacity. In other words, you can't just have skills, and then when these kids graduate, there's nothing there for them to do. So in other words, nobody's taking them on board into their industries and so on. And that is why in some of these schools of skills around the Western Cape, in Gauteng and in the Free State, particularly in the rural areas, they focus on, for example, agriculture, simply because that is the mainstay of the local economy. And what they find is that it's interesting that people who will come from the area into these schools will stay in the area, you know, and that's part of your rural development plan, which is really to stop people moving to the cities and so on, to find jobs, but to actually build those economies in those areas. But equally, there are generic skills, it seems to me, that you're going to need whether you are in Pretoria or Kokanap, you know. Somebody will need an electrician. Somebody will need somebody to fix up a refrigerator. Somebody will need a carpenter. It doesn't really matter where you are. Those skills are what I would call sort of all-encompassing. And you can actually then, it's high mobility skills as well. So I think that while there is some merit in saying, look, you need something specific to the local economy, but there are these other skills that are exportable and so on as well. So for me, I would say to you that yes and no. I think that if you're going to be very specific and you want to, for example, train kids to do hydroponics, it makes no sense to do it in the Northern Cape or, you know, where there's no or little or how thing with this. Or maybe hydroponics is a bad example. Maybe aqua farming or something like that. So clearly there needs to be some sensibilities going into the choices where you train people and so on. But equally, you know, if you train me to build a house in the Western Cape, I can go and do it in Lesotho. Ms. Mushwana?
Thank you, Jefferson. I wanted to separate skills from not coding, what that expects from me. Maybe we need some paradigms. Again, you see, those kids or learners that go for SAT, it's not necessarily because they cannot cope with literacy. I think it's their choice. And if we continue to debate, like if you don't cope here, then go to skills. It's like we're saying the skills that are very important. To me, they are the most important. We're saying you'll need an electrician, you'll need those people who come and fix your pipe. Those people, then you would go about looking for people with masters or doctors or professors of this way. If we continue in this particular committee, not to promote that, you see, SETs are not people who are not coping with matric. They decided, you know, most of them chose. And of course, there are those who are told you cannot go there. Therefore, they thought it's because they are not coping. Because if we don't change that the perception, it will continue to give a message out there that if you don't go to university, you are not doing anything worthwhile. And that is not true, because we need skills more than anything. The municipalities in this country are failing because of the lack of skills. There are people who are having those hoods. If you can say, let's have a party here and we'll put our hoods, people will be surprised. We'll be putting 1, 2, 3, and they don't mean much. I think we need to deal with that very seriously, so that the learners will be like taking skills as a concept, necessarily as something that you do because they don't cope with themselves. It's another way that they are misunderstanding this whole thing of intelligence. The intelligences are like, if I remember correctly, you see, special intelligence is different from the other intelligence. But that a person who can draw a plan, person who can design something, it's not necessarily not lesser, because this person is not specialized in what it is. Like if you do an honors in language and end up doing masters and you go on and on in language specifically, it's a different bed which must be respected, of course. But there is nothing different from somebody who does things. But then I wanted us to give out the message out there that skills are very important. Actually, we need skills in this country more than any other thing. Yes, people will always feel there's that ego because of these other qualifications when put on your plate. But the real issue is that to change any place we need skills. And because I see we are debating and we'll continue to talk of, if you're not quoting in metric, then you go, it shouldn't be like that. You choose.
Mm.
You choose to go there. And I know very brilliant kids who have chosen to go the FET way. I know. They decided they wanted to have anything with a difference. Because if you do it through FET, maybe it depends on this particular school. If you go and do it maybe in college 2000, by the time you get your entry, you are better skilled than a person with an ordinary grade 12. So maybe, as we debate, because I get lost as we talk about not coping with not coping. Maybe those who are doing the treatment not necessarily coping with the skills. Thank you.
Now, I think you make a very, very important point that we mustn't lose sight of, because I think you're absolutely correct that you can't talk about skills and your so-called academic matric as mutually exclusive. It's only for this category of kids or that category of kids. I think that's absolutely fundamentally important. However, and I wish I had a diagram that I could show you what is happening currently, right? And maybe just, and stop me if you think that I'm not explaining correctly. If you look at the attrition rate, you start off, what did we use 2009 cohort, right? In grade 12. So when you go back 12 years, so we take the, was it 2010?
2009.
2009 cohort, right? Those kids who have come from grade 1, who are in matric in 2009, okay? So they passed grade 1 12 years earlier, okay? Yeah, 12 years earlier. They start off being something like 1.5 million.
1.4.
Round it up to 1.5 million. Grade 1. Every year, you're losing kids, except for maybe one or two years there where you're gaining kids, but those are repeaters, right? You're losing kids. Come grade 9, you have quite a big number of kids who have left the school system. Now, the idea with that was that you could finish your training through an FET college. That was the idea. But when you look at research, and we chose the HSRC researchers to say, who is actually in your FET? Are these grade 9s actually going there? Because what we wanted an answer for was to say, if there are, let's say, 200,000 kids who have left grade 9 in a particular year, is FET absorbing 200,000 kids in the first year? You with me? So we're looking for that synergy, and we found something completely different. We found that actually at your FET, that the kids who are doing FET is what you were saying. It's those kids who choose, after doing their matric, passing successfully their matric, they choose to go to FET colleges to improve on their skills and to get a better matric or whatever, or to even go through a skills route, right? It is not your grade 9 who are going there, even though that was the idea initially when we said that at some stage you could exit your school at grade 9 and go into FET. Now, that's still possible. But the de facto situation is that it's actually your matrix who are doing that, who are choosing to go. And so, like any institution, if I apply, let's say you are the FET college, I apply and I'm a grade 9. Mr. Makubela is a matriculant. So we are competing for spaces. Who are you going to give the space to if there's one space available? You're going to give it to him. You're not going to prefer me, okay? So that is what is happening at your FET level, is that it's your successful matriculants who are getting there, not your grade 9. Question then arises, what is happening to those kids who have left grade 9? What options are there for them? Clearly at this stage, we don't have too many of those, what you call that Afrikaans word? Ambach schools. Or any other avenues, whether it's colleges or whatever. They just don't have too many choices. There's also a reason why kids leave at grade 9. It certainly isn't to join the FET colleges. There has to be a reason. And a lot of that is saying, a lot of the research is saying those kids are just not coping. They may have been, and remember those social surveys submission that we received, why is it that kids drop out? And a lot of that research is pointing to the fact that they fail sometimes more than once. Most, the biggest reason for kids dropping out of school at grade 9 would be because they failed more than once. So clearly as an academic stream, and remember, the one thing that we were quite sure about, when we first got to this portfolio last year, one of the first discussions that we had was with Uma Lucy and with the exams unit as to where they are pitching the standard of our education system. You will see less and less now that there is a debate about the standard of the education system. It's one of the highest in the world. In fact, this country is one of the very few countries in the world that insists that every single child does some form of math. Very few systems in the world insist that every single child does math. There's a historic reason for it and so on. But that speaks to the standard of your academic training at your schools, which is quite a high level. Then you have to accentuate it with language problems and so on. It becomes really difficult for some kids to cope in this kind of academic terrain. So a lot of them are leaving, and that's where the question is. When it comes to FET, as I say, it's your matriculants. It's those ones. And if you look when you get to matric, we started off with 1.5 million kids in grade 1. When you get, in 2009, you get to matric, you're left with about 500,000. 500,000 who have survived those 12 years, which means that you are shedding two-thirds, literally two-thirds of your cohort. Now, maybe they stuck somewhere in there. Maybe there's just repeating and so on and so on. But essentially, when you start from grade 1 to grade 12, you're losing two thirds. That's a crisis. That's the crisis that everybody says education is in. Because if you start, if any healthy system, you know that you're going to shed. But if you're shedding up to two-thirds, if it was the other way around, we get two-thirds and we shed one-third, that wouldn't be such a crisis. But it's actually the other way around. So what that is saying is that already when you get to matric, you are successful. I mean, just attaining matric, getting to register as a matriculant, you've already beaten the odds. Okay? Then you write your exam. Of the 500,000, last year 60% passed. 60% of that is about 300,000. 300,000 kids passed. And what is happening is that if you look at the spaces available at university, it's 20% of these kids are going to be able to get a place at university. Which means there is big competition at your universities for those spaces. But then, the competition moves down to your FET. As I say, he's got a matric pass. I'm sitting with a grade 9. Who's the college going to choose to occupy the space? Going to choose him. So that's what's happening. It's these. So our system is geared for the most successful. And we're giving options to the most successful. So your FET has now become an option for your most successful again. And those guys who have left the system throughout, especially at grade 9 and 10 and 11 now, have dropped out, they're getting less and less options for skills development. And that's the issue. And so what the proposal, and if you look at your documents that I've sent you where we make the proposal about a two-stream option in the curriculum, is what we're saying is that you choose You've got four compulsory subjects, right? The two languages, your life orientation, and your math or math literacy. Those are your compulsory. If you were to introduce two string options, so it's matric stream A, matric stream B. In your matric stream A is what you've got currently. So you've got your four subjects plus three additional electives. And you've got to write that and you've got to pass at a certain level and then you get your matric. Right? That's your current situation. Your stream B, we're saying you do your four, which is your compulsory. And then instead of having three other subjects like your geography, tourism and accounting, you would choose to do two major skills. So either you would choose electronics and carpentry, or you choose agriculture and horticulture or something like that, right? As your two skills components. So you would have the four academic plus your two, and you would go into what we call a stream B curriculum, which would be a skills curriculum. So at the end of your matric, even when you pass, you don't necessarily end up doing nothing. You end up having a skill as part of your schooling education. So you could literally walk into the job market, and that's when the society's expectation of a matric being able to get a job becomes realistic. At the moment, we expect our matrics to get a job, and that's unrealistic because that's not the point of the matric. The point of the matric is to give you an academic foundation so that you can go on to higher learning. And then what I'm saying is that for those kids who are dropping out before even getting to matric, there must be options as well. And that's where your trade schools, the ones that you are familiar with, hopefully, is the same thing that I'm thinking of. Or your schools of skills, which are currently now only for slow learners. Those must be opened up to everybody, really. Because that's really the nursery at which you're going to start developing a sound skills base. And that you don't necessarily need to do to a very high level of proficiency. You do it to a basic level of proficiency to equip kids to go into the workplace at a very basic level, and that sets them on a path for development further into their life, either through the trades, the various trades of CETAs or whatever, or through FETs when they get to a particular age and they feel, no, I'm now more matured, I can study academically, I want to improve myself. They're able to do those things. So those doors. So this is an option that I'm mooting, which really has one underlying theme, which is give maximum opportunity to everybody. Not, as you were pointing out, saying this is more equal than that and less equal than that. That's not going to help us, not going to take us further. In fact, you won't get money. I have Mr. Makubela, and then I'm going to go back to I'll give Mr. Kusan, and then I'll give you Mr. Kwanchan. Oh, you've covered it.
When I returned earlier, I think you ended up going to the issue about the regionalism of the skills, because it's a national kind of philosophy, but it's regionally based. So if you have got your local FHE, it's supposed to respond to the situation where that kind of economy or local economic development is supposed to happen. So I thought that you would. But now with this debate, I think there are three or four things that I think we need to deal with. The first is that why it's basically your matriculants who go to FET, in a way repeating matric. Of course, with some quality in terms of saying you're adding skills or whatever. But I think if we look at it in a hierarchical manner, to say it's first your high school, then your SAT, then your university. And what is happening is not like that. Matric and your SAT is actually equal. The difference will be the curriculum in terms of how you handle it. But in the main, what you do even in matric, you still find in the SAT. So to some degree, it's one thing. But in the minds of learner, I don't think that message is going out clearly. So some of them may even think that if they happen to drop because of other social factors, they may not be thinking of this option of an SAT. I don't think we are able to clarify that. To say you can as well, right from grade 9, go to SAT. Some may happen to get that information, some may not get it. They may be sitting at home when in fact they could even go to home, let alone this other challenge of competing with the one who's coming from matric. But I'm saying information may not be available that much to them. But coupled with that will be the fact that FETs themselves do not have the necessary capacity to absorb, which is the problem of higher education now. They don't have capacity to absorb the number or the numbers that come from the high school. Not just capacity in terms of infrastructure and all that, even in terms of the actual teachers or educators in there and so on. It's a lot of things. So for you to make FETs attractive and all that, you need to have people who teach there, who are up to standard themselves and so on and so on, and the necessary number that can absorb that. So everybody, as you advise them to say, go to FET, you must know that, yes, you have got provision. But if there's no provision, even if it's a theory, you just theorize, or it's a rhetoric kind of thing, because even as they go there, they can't be absorbed. But the other challenge why we'll be losing a lot of them, say at grade 9, in my view, is that there was this notion that the learners are not supposed to repeat a grade. So it's almost pass one, pass all with your peer group. And if you can't cope with them, you have to repeat as well. Ultimately, the system takes you out. Although, when you talk to the department, they will tell you that you don't necessarily dismiss learners. They can repeat, but it's not like the message out there. What I know is that you don't find kids repeating. At some point, there was an introduction of finishing schools that was phased out. There was another system that came in just to try and take care of those who are supposed to repeat, not repeating within the mainstream. Now they repeat from outside. So the message is to say we don't allow repeaters. The system does not allow repeaters. But the reality is that you have them who are supposed to repeat and actually go through the system. So you end up with them outside, and if the information is not clear, to think now that you are outside, if you do not repeat, you can actually go to FET. But the other issue which is a problem is that as they go to FET, they still meet that which made them not to cope. If it was about academic stuff that frustrated them, and they can do with skills which does not include issues of languages, math, and all, they still find that stuff there. So it's equal challenges. They can't run away. So that's where you think there's no option for them available, because when they're in the normal matric without skills, they fail because of certain things. They have to repeat. They are not allowed. When they have to go to FETs, they still find that academic stuff in there. So it's one thing. And they still not cope if you want to use that allowed. So at the end of the day, if they can't succeed like that, they are condemned to some periphery or somewhere. Nobody takes care of them. They roam the streets and so on and so on. Later we complain. But not that we lost many people in the system. We can't trace them. And so when we can trace them, but there's no provision. to say, now that they're out there in the cold, what do we do? Yeah, I thought I just needed to. Oh, no, the very last part is, even if they go from, whether they did matric and went to FET, or they went grade 9, went to FET, as they conclude or complete the FET stuff, they're not able, if they want to further their studies, they're not able to go to university. So the system cuts them. You will end up with your FET, and unless if you have performed somewhat so well that you can be a university on your own, not because you're coming with some stuff that can be credited by a university and have taken forward like that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I should think for what we are discussing here can assist in the economic development of this country. If we succeed, maybe to deal with all problems that surrounding this issue of skills development, we can be in line with the economic development of this country. But Chairperson, there are a few challenges that we have. For instance, the mindset of our people in terms of technical, in fact, FETs and universities. Some they feel that if you are at a university, you are better than those who are at the FET. But it's not that the case. But FET is better than those who are in university. Because they will be, maybe you will be having an information basic to academic records and so on. But when you go to FET, those people can deal with many issues in terms of skills and so on, which means we are facing a challenge of dealing with the mindset of our people. Try to pass a message so that they can hear and know very well what, in fact, the importance of FET. But they don't know very well what are the importance of the FET institution. And also, Chairperson, I should think the capacity of educators in our schools, it will be another challenge. As soon as we put this system that will coupled with the skills development at the school level, the challenge also will be the education, the capacity of these educators. And also that will be coupled with the resources. The availability of resources will be also a challenge in the upgrading of schools to be in line with that particular system. But I should think, if we can deal with this matter, trying to make sure that everybody understands it clearly. Educators at school, they must understand this. What do we mean by the skills development at school level, and the parents and learners themselves to differentiate between these FETs and universities? I should think we'll be able to contribute in the economic development of this country. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ponshwana, you covered it.
Yes.
Mr. Ponshwana?
Thank you. I want to believe I'm also covered. But maybe there is need to, I don't know, maybe to drive home this thing of things that make learners choose. Because somehow I read this story about kids that were humiliated by educators to the first this one, and everybody left them, and that maybe made them leave the school and stuff. And I wanted to give this noble how a true source of a child that I know who was in grade 11 in one school, in this model at school. The child was frustrated because I don't want to say he or she. I just told the child. This child complained when the principal announced there was a computer, a laptop stolen from one of the teachers' offices. Now the announcement came in English that this course is a dual medium. It's a dual medium. So usually the announcements are made in African. But on that subject, it was very different. It says, somebody stole a computer center. So this child raised their hand, which is not done, you know, and said, please, principal, say that in African also. Because it's like you are saying those who spoil the computer are those who speak English. And those who speak English are us, black. And again, and the child was in trouble. At the end of the year, that child went to the dismay of everyone because the child is here. The report said, the child says there's 11. So the child left for FEC. What I'm trying to say is that sometimes it's circumstances that. That value to it's not necessarily we need to move, and I'm glad that you understood that. But we need to move as the whole team to understand that there's nothing less about FET than a grade 12. And then I'm saying this with a grade 12 certificate. Otherwise, it would be seeming like I'm trying to protect my own certificate. Yes, when I left school, before the this is my first 35 years. Before 1974, when I left school, yes, I had a JC. But you know, after that, you have to correspond to get your district. And of course, you correspond and get a lot of teacher certificates. I think I'm still a good state with four. With four. four teacher certificates as I speak, and 8 years training. But what we have to understand from this level is the importance of SEC colleges. Because if we do not understand, I don't know how the people will say it. Because it's like we speak in cycles, unless if I don't understand. I'm trying to say, there's nothing wrong with stress. We need them. And we need to go to, maybe to check why they must afford to take this course. Sometimes it's because of being frustrated. I mean, if at the end of the day, you fail because you raise that a very important issue. You say, no, you can't, humbly, I'm sure this child was not said, humbly say, no, say it in Africa so that it's other people. And as it happened, the computer was found, the laptop was found, with an African boy, you know. So that sometimes learners are frustrated and they have to take a particular route. But I'm saying we need skills to change this country. I somehow we have to emphasize it. Because no philosophy come with all this other technology we take.
And I would just add to that, Mrs. Moshwana, that we need skills, but we also need to provide the option to acquire those skills to those kids who are successful in matric and those who are not. That's the only thing that I would add.
One aspect that we haven't sort of touched on is that look, frustrations come to everybody, and there's always going to be that. It doesn't matter how perfect we put in place some system. Somebody's going to be frustrated about something because of the nature of who we are. But a lot of kids get to that age, and they simply want to earn their own money. Sometimes it's pressure from someone else in the family, but mostly it's people because that's an age where people start to feel that they want it well. They do want to be independent. Most of us want to be independent, and so the thing that kids would then relate to in being independent would be if I can earn my own money. So they're looking for ways to earn their own money, and obviously there are certain opportunities on the street for people to supposedly earn their own money, and that's absorbing people, unfortunately, in a lot of cases. And so without those kind of what did we call it before, apprenticeships and things like that. We also just not, we're going to miss the mark because people are not wanting to go to college. They're not wanting another thing. Whether you're doing skills or whether you're doing this way, that way, or whatever other way, there's no money involved. People want money to be independent. So I'm thinking we'll still miss a whole section of people if we're not providing some way of working and learning at the same time.
Well, that's the second string. Okay. If you're thinking about doing your matric, at grade 10, you have a choice. You, at the moment, for example, you choose your subjects, remember, when you get to grade 10. But they're all academic. In other words, whether you do geography or history, it's still academic, it's books, it's learning. It's not developing a skill to do something. I can't manufacture this plate, okay? But what I'm saying is at the time that you are in grade 10, if you have a choice between a purely academic stream and a combination of academic plus two skills in your schooling career, by the time you get to matric, then you are speaking to those people that you're speaking to. Because once, if my ambition is, I finish matric and then I want to go and earn my own money, I don't have a hope in hell of doing that if I were to have the academic stream. Because what is that preparing me for? It's preparing me for higher learning, either at FET or at university, or both. That's what that matric is preparing you for. So what I need is the option of saying, yes, I'm going to do my maths, I'm going to do my languages, I'm going to do my life orientation, all the compulsory things. But as opposed to the elective courses, I'm going to do two skills, I'm going to major in two skills, from grade 10 to grade 12. So when I get to grade 12, I not only have my compulsory subjects, which should qualify me for my matric, per se, in addition, I have two skills. I can fix up computers, and I can type. Those are my two skills. So now I have the option. Do I want to go FET college and enhance those skills? Or do I want to go into the workplace? Because guess what? I can, because I can type 60 words a minute, whatever. And those are my options. Then suddenly we've opened the doors as opposed to shutting them. Then I can go and work for 2 years and then say, it's not for me, I'm going to go back to study. And I go back into FET, and then I either enhance my skills in computer, whatever, or I go into a completely different field, or I go on to university. And I start studying for a Bachelor of Arts or whatever. So all this thing is doing is it's creating the kind of options for the aspirations of different people. So if you are a successful person at your schooling, you still have options. If you are not so successful for whatever reason, discrimination or societal issues, it could just be that I'm really very poor. I come from a poor background. I have huge emotional problems at home. That's why I'm not functioning at school. It could just be that. But for whatever reason, if you don't give children options, you're going to, and that's the problem with the system, is that it just does, it only caters for those people who are successful. And in our society, that means very few people, comparatively speaking, because of the transitional nature of our society. As I say, we are very abnormal in many respects. We've only had a democracy for 15 years. Apartheid education has really ravaged our society to a large extent. All of those issues, poverty, big issues, the issue of being an orphan, health issues, big issues. So we cannot sit back and say, oh, well, so-and-so has failed because they just dwarf. Because in our society, there are just too many issues that speak to that kind of failure. Language issues being one of them. Social issues. You've heard the kinds of research that has been happening when it comes to orphans. When it comes to just homes that are broken. We've got about 200,000 to 300,000 kids living on our streets, for heaven's sake. You can't say to me that if you put them into a normal school, they're going to be able to flourish. They can't. You have to provide options.
One of the things that we're doing is that we're going to think
of
the streets as well. Okay?
Of course.
But that's what I'm saying. What you're predicting is really going to open more choices. Give people more choices, and I think it's absolutely excellent. But I'm still thinking that we're still not going to actually hit the problem, because it's at a certain age that people want to be independent. They're not then thinking, okay, which way should I go? They're thinking, if I want this, I want to earn my own money, and then you can't tell me what to do. That's what they're saying. So if it's not meant specifically to a company offering a set job or somebody with some kind of startup or something, it's going to be something really way more tangible, I think, if we really want to get, because on the street, there's a certain amount of money you know you're earning a day.
But let me point you to then to the experience of the schools of skills. When you spoke to that principal, he will say to you that his office is like an employment agency. Because 70% of the kids in the Western Cape, at least, that's according to the Western Cape Department stats that we got, 70% of the kids who are coming and graduating from these schools of skills are walking into jobs straight after school. So, but you see, you've got to produce those people first, because the problem that we have at the moment is that there is a shortage even in our economy. So, for example, this particular school that we visited, the principal there says, I cannot have enough welders. Because the minute they get some experience, they're out of the school. And his biggest challenge is to keep those guys in school till they finish. And he says that he cannot cope with the demand that's coming in from the local economy to his school. Because they phone him up at the beginning of the year to say, look, you know, have you got welders? And he said, well, we've just started the school year, kind of thing. Absolutely. And I think the more, and you see all of these concerns that Mrs. Kosana and Mrs. Moshwana are raising about the issue of FETs and the status and skills and the status of skills and so on, for me is secondary. Because the minute young people start seeing their peers walking into jobs, having a skill, being able to earn their own living in a dignified way, it's a self-perpetuating cycle. So it may not happen immediately, the first or second lot, you may have problems and so on with numbers and whatever. But the minute people start seeing that happening, because that's what happens, that's young people, they need role models, they need people they can emulate, they need big brothers, they need big sisters and so on. It's just human nature. And the minute you start seeing that happening, that people are actually going through these schools and are becoming successful in life and being able to, you know, feed their own families and become independent, whatever, those things will immediately start attracting people. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, you're not going to lose young people to crime and to other issues. That's always going to be there. If you look around the world, that's always going to be there. But we shouldn't be pushing our kids into it, which is what we're doing with the system by excluding and closing doors to them. We should be opening those doors, giving them the options, and then some of them will still, you know, fall through the cracks, but most of them will be walking through those doors.
Can I ask something, and I apologize again because I had a missed call section, I think. The proposals that you're speaking about
No, well, what I've done is I've developed an internal discussion document within our study group and our party and so on. So we're hoping to discuss that as soon as we can. But clearly, the you know, we're at a policy level. So, you know, if we can get my party, for example, to accept the policy, then things start following. But that's the big hurdle that we have at the moment, is to just get over that policy issue. But it's something that once we've discussed, you know, I'm happy to distribute and so on to you guys as well, and then you can look at internalizing some of those issues. Mr. Nakubela, you had your hand up, eh? No? Did somebody else, Mr. Skosana or Mr. Pochani? No? Okay. Shall we move on to the next issue then? That was the career issue.
Submission 15. a few submissions, beginning with this one.
Have we dealt with the career issue, Mr. Sunday? Remember there were two issues there? Anybody wants to speak to that? I think Mrs. Moshwana had something to say on this issue. Remember I said we must separate it, Mrs. Moshwana? You remember you were raising something about the career education and career guidance issue?
Yes.
You can now raise it because I asked you to shelve it.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, my question was like, wanting to check why the submission is talking of career education and career guidance. Because career education, to me, is the same as career guidance. Unless I don't understand it. But I don't understand why there was emphasis of moving. It's like you're moving from career education to career education.
Look, I must say I'm no expert at this class either, but let me read from this portion here.
Yeah.
Maybe it will give greater clarity. And it's possibly because, you know, in this country we don't have a great history when it comes to this issue of career education or career guidance, whatever. At best, I think people used to have guidance counselors and then, you know, one person for the whole school, which is like 2,000 people, and then one when you are in grade 9 or grade 8 or whatever, they'll come and they'll give a summation of your different choices and stuff like that, which was not a lot. But that's certainly my idea of career guidance. But let's just read this part here. This person, by the way, is a psychologist, Mr. Mashwana, in private practice with extended experience in career counseling and is specialized in the field of helping school leavers adjusting to the new world of work, okay? Just so that you know who we're dealing with. It. Then it says here on the fourth paragraph on, if you've got that education 14 on that page, you'll see there on the fourth paragraph it says, the career counseling profession worldwide is undergoing a paradigm shift towards a new emphasis on career education rather than career guidance or matching. So in other words, I think, let us continue. Little is done or written in South Africa in this regard, let alone the development of programs with an African method for accessible teenagers and their parents and teachers, or the recognition of career psychology as a separate profession, as in countries such as Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and others. Traditional practices and undifferentiated life orientation syllabi stifle teenagers already living in this new world into still believing and aspiring to qualifications rather than a versatile skill set as basic school leaving equipment. The attitude needed for relishing in this, I think it's flourishing is the word, in this new world, we adults struggle to adapt to requires an understanding of the redefined concepts of job, work, and career illustrated and facilitated by William Bridges' term, de-jobbing, describing the new labor market associated with terminology such as portfolio career, positive uncertainty, lifelong learning, planned happenstance, and the art of making a living, to mention a few. Now, and then he goes on to saying things like he's developed material and concepts that would assist assist kids to have a more holistic approach to what he sees as career education. Now, what I've done here is I've sent a note to Mr. Bundy or Mr. Brown to say, you know, if he wants to, this gentleman can submit some material to us to so that we can get a deeper understanding of what he's referring to. But I'm not sure if we have followed up on this and whether... I'm not sure why you people are not following it up. Can you just, when you get these books, Mr. Brown, just go through some of these, because here's the note right here.
On that one, because maybe clarity that can be given here is that, to me, career guidance is like giving you direction, giving you the option that this is what you can do. Like it started very early in even at the intermediate stage. Learners in this life orientation of ours, there is career guidance. Like when, actually even from the foundation phase, you ask learners, what do you want to become when you grow up? You know, they say, a doctor and stuff. And when they go to intermediate phase, then you unpack what doctors do they call it people who help us. When there is this, we go to, when we are ill, we go to, and those things. Now, can that education to me will be now you have chosen, then you get the skill that you have. But then the way this question was put was a little bit confusing. Because it's the same, except that you start by being guided, career-wise. And then after you have chosen, then you are trained. It's a package. So you can't say these letters because they go together. You need to be guided then to get the career, if my understanding goes well. Thank you, sir.
Reminded of another debate we had about religion and education and religious education. The one would refer to a specific religion and the teaching that. The other will be broadly about religion, religious, various religions, so it will be broader. But in South Africa at some point, people were taught religion education, not religious education. So it will be one specific kind of a religion. And I may not necessarily be responding here, but I want to give my own understanding. That if you're talking guidance, it will mean that the teacher takes the responsibility to say this is the way to go. But if you're talking career education broadly, you just teach what is there. You just tell what is available and what it takes. And out of that, the children themselves or learners will then take their own options. So you don't necessarily guide them to say this is what you must do simply because you think that's the right thing to do. And the other problem with the teacher or the career guidance that we had mostly is that teachers themselves were not exposed to quite a lot of careers or various trades. They will be limited in themselves. And only to find that if the teacher knows about or knows well about 15 or 20 of those, that's what you get to learn. But you will find that careers may be more than 400. You know, I can't remember the number, but there are many. So many. So if these teachers don't even understand themselves that much, they can't go to that extent. I mean, career guidance will be as good as the knowledge of the teacher in that class. That's what kids will be exposed to. So I take it here, the issue may be to emphasize that you don't necessarily teach with a view to channel. You teach this is what the world of careers is like. And it should be for these kids once empowered to then be able to take a decision. So it means you must research more, you must understand what you're dealing with and so on. I'm just trying to say, to understand what the submission itself to saying I think it may, career guidance may be limiting as opposed to career education, which may go at wild in terms of saying this is what is available out there.
Now I think clearly there's that differentiation that needs to be made, but again it's very difficult for us to speak to some of these things because we don't bear that experience. And I think that there is some sense, if that is what this is, career education, that there is some sense that I get that we need to try and import some of these things into our school for the reasons I mentioned before, that we're a very abnormal society. We don't have the normal kind of role models in some of our communities that a normal society would have had and so on. And so, I mean, I don't see anybody here opposing this kind of submission to say that we don't need career education particularly if there are modern trends that we should be researching more, and certainly the department should be making some effort, even before high school probably, at educating kids as to what is out there. So I think that's how we conclude that issue, Mr. Bundy, that I don't think that there is any divergence on this matter, that clearly career educational, vocational education, or whatever it's called, there needs to be a lot more of it in our schools than there currently is. And you'll see a lot more submissions on this very important issue as well. Okay, next.
Submission 15, we have a few submissions, I think about three or four, starting with this one, which call for the metacognitive approach to teaching. This approach basically emphasizes a questioning technique which stimulates learners to think independently. It proposes techniques and approaches to foster space for creative, self-regulatory, goal-directed learning communities. Now, Ms. Janssen van Vieren gives a draft proposal outlining ideas for the development and implementation of cognitive training in schools. The recommendations flow from that. She's submitting that the metacognitive approach will be introduced via teacher training to enhance certain facilitation competencies. There is a need for intervention through integrating the relevant cognitive training principles with school subjects such as English and mathematics. Integrate emotional intelligence principles into school subjects.
Okay, I think you're going to find that, and unless somebody wants to speak specifically to it, what this is a teaching technique, which is different from what currently pertains, right? And what this is one of the very, very many products that have been developed by individuals or groups in the private sector, which really want to market to the education department and to stakeholders in education generally. And what I suggested was, you recall that at some stage we had a whole lot of presentations of such people who come and explain their products and so on to us. And part of the problem that I perceive currently is that there is no place, no platform for such innovative material to be showcased to the department or to schools and so on. And one of the things that I thought that we must do at some stage, and in fact I did say during the public hearings that one of the recommendations we should try and make is that the department should look at creating such a platform, whether it's in the form of a kind of an exhibition once a year or something of that sort, where private sector can come, because there's some very, very good, you remember the early childhood development stuff, those cartoons and those videos and stuff like that, how it really is, it fosters interactive learning and interest in young kids and so on. So I think a lot of these things, what happens is that some provinces, they tend to pick up on one or two of these things, and they run with it in some schools, and they pilot it in other schools, and you know, that kind of thing. But there doesn't seem to be a holistic approach where people can share and discuss and so on. So a kind of a platform, I think, is what is required by the department, so that people can come and showcase, even if it's just annually, what they've got. And, the department can then assess it and then do a kind of catalog in the way that they do with the textbooks to say, these are the things that we think would be useful for certain things, you know, that kind of stuff. Mrs. Moshwani?
I just do not want to get lost. I'm taking this metacognitive approach versus the group work. That's how it is. Learners think independently if they are grouped. You give them a topic and they discuss it or whatever, they come up with a project or something. But then they are thinking independently because they are like, it's like we are, the proposal here is just coming with a technology which is talking to something that's existing as we speak. Group work is the same as metacognitive approach, unless it's, I don't understand it correctly. So that sometimes we are seated with proposals that come here simply because there is a gap between comprehending what the term used recently referred to. Because if you talk to group work, for sure, learners think independently. You give them a topic and say, come and go and do 1, 2, 3 and come back with a project. You don't interfere with their thinking. And now, there is this big English metacognitive. To me, it's the same.
I don't know. I'm not a teacher, but I
imagine that it depends on your approach as a teacher as well. I mean, if you're that kind of teacher that is able to facilitate that kind of independent thinking, that, it seems to me, would certainly squarely fall within what the person is talking about. What I'm saying is it's not for us here to assess whether this is a good training mechanism or a bad one, because we're not the education experts. What I'm saying is that there are education experts out there who have come up with all these different kinds of methodologies. And really what I'm saying is let us recommend that there is a platform where everybody can come and, you know, put their little 2 cents worth onto this platform. And let the department then assess and say, look, we think this will be very useful for a technique format at this level. So schools or provinces that want to buy it, this is something that we would recommend. So that you don't have a situation, and this is what I'm finding is the real problem, is that if I know you in the Limpopo education department, right, and I've got a product, which may or may not be bad, I mean, it may be a very good product, but because I know you, and because you know, I know that you've got a particular problem in a particular school or a region or whatever, I come to you and I flout my product and you purchase it. But there may be 20 other products out there, and because those people don't seem to be able to access you, it becomes a question of people knowing each other or being able to, you know, gap in where there is a gap and so on. So I'm saying to level the playing field, and given that there's a whole host of stuff out there, some of which we've seen and some of which has been really very impressive, I must say, why can't we have what we call, you know, these expos that you get here at the ICC? Why can't the department have one such thing annually or every 2 years or whatever it is? And then different people are invited to come and showcase and exhibit their product. And from there, you know, the different departments can come, have a look at what is available and so on. And that in and of itself is a whole market. And can obviously be sold internationally as well and so on. So I'm just saying that it's not for us here to say, look, this product, because you're going to find there's other issues as well and other techniques that people are going to want to sell. It's not for us to say, look, department must go for this as opposed to that.
So,
exactly. But at the moment, you find that there is that disjuncture. You know, some people are piloting certain things in certain provinces, but not in other provinces. Others are saying, well, you know, we need to be introduced to somebody in the Department of Education before our product can be looked at. And that's not our role either. It's not to, you know, we don't introduce private investors to officials. That's not the way we do it. But given that there's such a plethora of good ideas out there and so on, it seems to me just logical that there should be some kind of platform that the department creates to just look at it and assess it and absorb it and whatever.
Yeah.
Mr. Poncha?
Talking about the platform and the new techniques which are outside there. I'm not sure whether the department still has what it used to call in-service training centers, you know. During holidays, we as teachers, or English teachers, all over the province, would be invited to that in-service center for 2 weeks or a month during holidays, and introduced to these new methods of teaching a particular subject. And you go back to their school, renewed, I remember, would come back from those in-service centers with new techniques, motivated by these experts who were, they were not expressed by the department, but they were placed in that center to always explore new methods in each subject. That platform, I don't know whether it's still has that one, I don't know. They don't know.
But strictly speaking, you're now speaking to teacher development and education and in-service training, which, by the way, you know, could have some synergy with some of these things, because you could, you know, be at the cutting edge of new techniques and so on through this kind of platform as well. So perhaps you're quite right that the two speak to each other in some sense. But, you know, I'm just a bit wary of saying that we must start discussing in-service training centers. I think we start discussing that issue when we deal with teacher development under that heading. And that this platform then can necessarily speak to that. But that is something the department will need to, you know, to develop a synergy with. That's assuming they agree with our recommendation that they design some kind of platform. What that platform is, of course, is not for us to say. You know, they could just create space on their website, for example, for somebody to come in and Wikipedia the kind of stuff that they have on. The platform as such is something that they should investigate, not for us to impose. So can I ask you to keep that notion of in-service training centers as well in mind when we get to teacher development, so we don't miss it when we get there, right? Anybody else wants to speak to this issue? Can we agree that we'll formulate a kind of recommendation for some kind of platform where people can come and exhibit their stuff? But the exact wording of which we'll define later on. But in principle, do we agree that that's... Mr. Scotland?
Yeah, Mr. Scotland, I agree with you. But we must not formulate something which will be in isolation from other techniques. Because in education, we've got different techniques when you have a contact with learners in the classroom. And the questioning technique is part of those techniques that we're applying. As we propose, it must be in line with others, not in isolation. Thank you.
But I don't want to speak to this technique. I want to speak to something larger. I'm saying people have got different products. And obviously techniques are employed in those products. So we're not here to assess whether this technique is better than some other technique. What we're saying is that there seems to be a whole range of solutions that people have designed that they want to sell for the purpose of making a profit. Okay? So from professors to ordinary people who are consultants, business consultants or whatever, they've developed these products. And we're saying we've seen some of them in the public hearings. Of course, not exhaustive. We haven't invited everybody. Like this particular one, we haven't seen. But maybe the department should create a place where everybody can come and just show them what they've got. That's all I'm saying, Mr. McVeigh.
Yes, I think. If surely that is not happening, we must create that platform for this and many other things that have to do with education and new approaches and all. What I'm trying to think now is you may find that they did expose whatever they have to the officials, but still felt a need to approach us and say, we have got this kind of thing.
why can't it be introduced in school? Surely that will mean they might have got frustration either when they met. So they're trying to say, you from Parliament, can't you assist in ensuring that this thing happens? And sitting here, we're saying, no, this can't be our role. They must find their way of pursuing their own techniques or approaches or whatever, which can be the role of the officials within the department who are charged with these responsibilities, either to agree, to buy in into some of these approaches or not. It's not necessarily us, which I squarely agree. You know, that we can't go to the department and cause them to endorse or not to endorse a particular approach. You know, all we want is what we want the system to produce in terms of our own learners. So policy-wise, we'll dictate what should happen. But within that, officials will see what systems are best suited for the particular policies that we have put in place. So that we can be able to do. I'm just saying, in the event they still feel they must approach us to say, but this is what we did, you know, we must be able to clarify the role. That, yes, we saw your submission and so on, but this is how far we can go. And that we have provided. But we cannot go beyond that to say, now, going to officials with you, your hand, you know, carrying you by hand, and saying, well, but these particular people and their techniques and so on and so on. I think that they must be able to understand. But then they will think we have submitted, nothing has happened. As if by that submission, it was enough press to then say, introduce the thing as best international or whatever.
Oh. No, you're quite correct in the way you've summed it. What we will do is we'll try and make a copy of the report, at least an executive summary, available to all the people who've made submissions to us so that they can see what it is that we have recommended and where their submission would kind of fit in. So hopefully they know undue expectations as well on the part of some individuals. Okay. Sure, Mr. Bush.
Schools, individual schools, are they closed to these outside people with their educational wares to come and play in the school?
I don't think that is the case.
Okay.
Because, you know, this is precisely what is happening at the moment, it seems to me, is that if I've got a product and I know you, you're a school principal, and I come to you and I say, look at this wonderful thing, and you're a school principal who's very concerned about the pass rate or whatever, and you've got the money and the resources to do so, you'll go and you'll employ the thing in your school. And most of these products are very good. But the problem is that clearly a lot of them, I mean, how many people haven't you heard when they came here, they said, this is the idea that we have, but we haven't developed it because the economies of scale is not there. So we want the department first to say, well, they're going to buy X amount of our products and then we'll, you know, go into full production. Now, that's not our role. But what we did do, which is something that hasn't been done currently, is we gave them a platform to come and showcase. And it is through this showcasing that we at least have realized that there's a lot of stuff out there that can make the life of teachers simpler and so on and so on. You know? And that's all we're saying, is that the department should have a similar kind of interface with the private sector or whatever, and just see what is out there before, and then start developing policies around where the individual school should be or shouldn't be or whatever it is. You know? Okay, that takes care of that particular one. We've got let's deal with one more before we adjourn, which one is the next?
It will be 17.
Yeah.
Submission 16.
Was
called for oral service,
yes.
Textual and oral service.
Yes.
the last person, Bernd Augustine, which says integrate emotional intelligence principles into school subjects. The assumption will be now it's not necessarily integrated, the way to be integrated. And it's a statement that you either affirm or not. And I'm just not sure whether we, because it does not necessarily belong to the technique or the new thing. It can either go on its own or not. And I may not be very sure that it is not integrated, but the assumption here is that it's not integrated and therefore the system should be integrated.
Look, this is a product, as I was saying to Mrs. Mashwana when she raised this issue, is we are not here to assess the standards of this particular product. So in other words, this is a product that they've come up with. If you read the submission, they will say to you, in the submission, our approach is metacognitive, which means that we have a specific teaching style that we articulate. Integrated in our fundamental philosophy is the question of emotional intelligence attached to every other intelligence, that you know, all of those things. But that's their package. That is what makes up their product. So they're selling us a product, a hot chocolate product. And what I'm saying is, let the department take that product, compare it with other products, and let them at least know what is out there, you know. For whatever purposes. I'm not saying let us go and decide which hot chocolate product is better of the two and whether in fact there are some elements of this already in the system or not or whatever it is.
No, if that is the case, I thought it's a separate, is two things.
No.
I was looking at it as the other being that approach or technique. Then as part of the submission, they were saying,
I see what you mean. But this is precisely, you see, this thing is saying we have come up with an approach, and our approach takes into cognizance these issues. But it doesn't give us the product, but it tells you about the product. And this is the context within which it's doing so. Okay? So it's in Afrikaans, but if you can't read it properly, then just, you know, ask somebody to interpret it for you. But that's basically what they're saying. They've come up with a package that they want to sell, kind of thing. Okay? So I've just said, I've put a kind of line through the input and the recommendation. And I've said, this is an issue that we're going to recommend that the department provide a platform to people to showcase. Okay. Sorry, and we now on BES Education 17 proposes to establish a digital broadcast network. Do you want to also deal with this one, Mr. Bundy?
Yes. I don't know. It's possibly a case for a similar case for a platform to showcase innovative approaches. In this particular case, the proposal is about interactive TV.
Okay, so this is another innovation that people have devised. And this, by the way, is for both teacher development as well as for use in schools and for school governing bodies and so on, right? So this is, it's almost distance education, which would also deal with the rural issue. So it's a solution for a whole lot of things, this particular one, right? So again, we'll say it's a platform that needs to be created, right? Okay, we then skip the next one because we took Mr. Fisser.
Submission 19 is from Mr. Graham Block. He argues that the problems in our schools arise from a toxic mix of challenges, including the legacy of apartheid and other problems. He identified three levels. First one, the level of in-class where teachers are the key. The second one, the level of support to school. And lastly, the social level. He makes proposals based on the 10-point program. If you recall, he has written a book about which embraces this issue. That includes the following: getting teachers in class, on-time teaching, giving children a firm foundation, support for teachers, ensuring that all stakeholders are involved, enriching learning at home, and the need to prioritize. That comes from the 10-point program.
Now, these ones that you've highlighted, Mr. Bundy, is there a reason you highlighted them in the recommendations? I see there's some in bold.
No.
Okay. Look, basically this is essentially speaking to the 10-point plan, which is now part of the policy of the department. And I don't know if anything more needs to be said about this matter, but I'm going to open it up, I think, generally. If anybody wants to speak on any point here, you're quite welcome to do so.
May not directly link, but it's by my thoughts, but having spoken to some teachers at different places in the last while. Is the department making a determined effort to speak directly to teachers about the changes so that people are not going to speculate and anticipate all sorts of imagined things that are or aren't happening or whatever? Because I'm just thinking a lot of what we're sitting with at the moment was because of changes that happened that people weren't ready for, and there was negative sort of perceptions that were attached to that that created negative outcomes. But I'm thinking even now that we've got these positive changes that we can see how positive they are, we sort of go ahead assuming that everybody's going to get the positive out. But actually all people are looking at, I think, from that point is, oh God, more change.
Mm.
How will this affect me? Probably it's going to do this or do that, or maybe that by the time you go a few probablys or maybe, people have got that negative mindset. So I'm just wondering if there's anything we could do sort of like immediately that we just get to teachers directly, one-on-one, saying this is how it's meant to impact, and if it doesn't, let us know. You know, I don't know. I'm sensing that we're in a situation now where we're expecting a huge positive like turnaround, and because we may be the teachers of a key, they might be just right now starting to get a little bit of a negative attitude, just thinking change, and is it going to be a problem?
Well, I think most of the presentations have actually welcomed the announcement. The announcements, of course, pertain to changes that will start happening only in 2011. And the announcements basically are looking at, well, the one thing that you missed in our last meeting when we met with the DG and he gave us a briefing on the what they call the 2014 action plan, is this issue of that you're raising is they're very aware of. And what they've done is they've said, if they issue something, that must not be reinterpreted at any level, province down, so that there'll be one communique to everybody. In addition, what they've done is they are looking at, they've got a newsletter which you may have received, that every single teacher has received as well. So something that is a communique in simple language to teachers that asks, you know, the most commonly asked questions from a teacher's perspective and so on. Then the third thing that they are busy doing is they're looking at mass SMS communication, which they can then use to communicate directly with teachers around these changes and so on. But if you look at the presentations that we've received and submissions that we've received, by and large, there hasn't been anybody that says, "Now look, these changes are bad changes." What some people have said is that this may not go far enough. That in terms of the administration, that there's still too much of administration, despite the fact that there's a reduction and so on, and that there should be more and so on. So I don't think that I've been getting a sense that there's a negative reaction to change per se. There's generally been a positive view, but there's also been this notion that perhaps we haven't gone far enough. So my sense is a bit different.
Can you say something now with the first chapter?
I'm hoping that it will, yeah.
Obviously, we all saw the changes were good.
And I think that the timing is also important because they started communicating these changes now for next year. So that gives them some time and some space to address any further concerns that people may have in terms of practical implementation down, you know, so that you don't have an announcement, let's say in December for January, but you start having those discussions already now and people start getting used to what is expected of them down the line and so on. But we'll keep tabs on those issues as well, because I do think that there's still some confusion about what is really going to happen, particularly in terms of the, you know, the reduction of the learning areas, which areas we're going to actually reduce and how and so on. Those things obviously are details that we'll keep tabs on. But coming back to this submission, is there anybody that wants to speak to any of the issues here? Of course, today we failed in the first issue, which is getting teachers to classrooms on time teaching. Okay, so let's then stop here, and at least what we've done is we've finished book one. Am I correct that we finished book one? Okay. And we will then start with book two. At our next meeting, and what I wanted people to please do is from next week, I'm going to go fairly quickly through some of the submissions. So I want you to please just, even if you just read your summaries, and just see which ones you want to speak to, because I'm going to say Best Education 20, 21, 22, 23. I'm taking it that people have read these things, and I know I have read it. So if there's something I want to speak on as well, I will say to you, I want to speak on something on this particular one. So I want us to please now try, because we've had some of the more substantive discussions. There may be one or two that we still have outstanding, but generally we've had quite substantive discussions on these topics. And that's how I want us to proceed from now on, because I think that a lot of these issues are going to be repetition of the broader areas that we've identified. And just to reiterate, how we're going to do the report is we're going to identify the issues that, as we've done now, so for example, teacher development will be a big issue, right? Then we'll fill in those discussions and those people who have said what on teacher development in the report. Likewise, on teacher-pupil ratio, that will be a big issue. And we'll then put in our deliberations on that issue. So that the report won't be a comprehensive report on Mr. So-and-so said so-and-so. It will be about these are the issues that most people have raised and that we've identified as a portfolio committee as being big issues if we want to ensure that people have access to quality education in our country, because that was what public hearings were about. So just keep that in mind as well. So that's what I'm saying. Pick out the issues from these summaries that you want to also speak to. Okay? Thank you very much for coming, and I hope that everything goes well.